Welcome to today's Critical Eye podcast, Inspiring Leaders to Succeed. My name's Hannah Daniels, and I'll be hosting this episode, which is the seventh in its series. So these podcasts are part review, but very much an expansion of subject matter. So engaging on topics at the forefront of business leaders' minds, always topical, thought-provoking, and enabling you to learn from leaders at the very top of their game, who have and continue to deliver amazing results. So really excited to be recording, having just returned from our trip to Singapore. We recently held our Asia Leadership Retreat, and I'm actually joined today with one of our fantastic speakers from the event, Neha Parikh. So Neha's going arm in arm with me today to tackle this rather meaty topic of leading high impact transformation, a key theme which emerged from the discussions had. So hello, Neha, how are you today?
Hi, Hannah. Very good to meet you. I'm doing well and happy new year.
Happy New Year. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
So, Neha, you're the HRD of Dyson's global supply chain operations. And prior to joining Dyson, you also led a very impressive tenure at IBM. I think you were most recently HRD ASEAN in Singapore. So a little bit about Neha. She's passionate about constantly learning, leading bold and new initiatives, and giving back to society. You'll realize throughout the podcast, she is highly experienced in the arena of transformation, making her perfectly positioned to be lending her insights today. I am keen to make the most of the time we have today. So we're at the beginning of 2023. Most organizations are realizing there's going to be some tough economic challenges ahead, safe to say. And if they want to survive, they're going to have to transform. So the pressure's on. It's about getting big decisions right, open communication, and working them hard. Neha, again, it is such a pleasure to have you join me today. Thank you so much. And I thought a good place to start would be maybe to look a bit of a deeper look into some of the driving forces behind business transformation. So our 2022 Asia Leadership Research saw that adapting to new customer behaviors was found to be the number one reason for driving business transformation. So this was followed by digitalization, cost reduction, and sustainability. Bearing this in mind, I'd love to hear from you. Why do you think so many businesses are looking to remodel? And perhaps quite crucially, what do you think businesses are looking to achieve within this?
That's a great question and a great start to our conversation, Hannah. I believe organizations today are like organisms. I read this somewhere and it resonated with me because much like organisms, organizations need to continuously evolve and adapt to not just survive, but also thrive in the current environment. And based on my own experience where business transformation was very defined, at least that's how I thought about it. You know, you knew what you're trying to do. It was organized and one thing was happening at a time. Everyone had one goal. I feel I've come to learn that they vary. Transformation really varies in content, in terms of pace, in terms of how it's initiated, whether it's initiated by the enterprise or due to external forces. So I think doing business in today's landscape means that there are many interconnected or independent issues. There are so many stakeholders, so many agendas, and that's why businesses need to remodel, need to transform, and need to understand how to ace and thrive in this current environment. It's also equally important to understand, you know, why one needs to transform to your question. So it could be driven by, you know, sometimes your transformation can be slow motion and it's deliberate, especially when it's focused on cultural changes, which no one aims to achieve overnight, right? It has a long-term view, you need patience, and you need continuous learning and improvement. Sometimes you do transformation sprints, which are much of the org changes that happen, which are to change the status quo. So enterprises do that. Many times it's negotiated. You know, when GDPR was launched, for instance, a lot of us in the HR world also had to transform because you need to think about how do you change how you operate in the country to actually abide by the rules. And one of the common mistakes here is to move too quickly. Because you definitely need to understand it well. And then the last point I'd make is sometimes it's, for lack of better terminology, I think it's termed hijack transformations, which occur as a result of things that you actually had not anticipated and are not pleasant. An example would be our Russia's invasion of Ukraine and how businesses have had to change, COVID. So it's very important to spot the need to transform, what kind of transformation is needed, and also understand what are the different transformations happening at the same time, because it cannot be all deliberate. Sometimes it just comes on you and you need to tackle it.
I think that was a great overview, and clearly a lot of spinning plates happening all at once that leaders are having to tackle. And certainly I think it's probably the first time a lot of leaders have led through such a complex time. I mean, continuing kind of on that thread, data and analytics, we know that most organizations are already using them to their advantage, but how can they be used in the right way, sort of to drive the right kind of changes forward?
Yeah, and this is, I think data is the new oil, right? I remember my previous organization's CEO said this, and I found that very, very catchy, but I realize it's more and more relevant today. So a company's ability to compete and to thrive is determined by how quickly they are able to make decisions. And quick decisions need to be backed or be data-driven. Of course, data is also used to design, you can change your current product offerings, you can change the product itself, et cetera. But I think where it's really important when it comes to transformation is data only provides the information, right? Analytics is where you get the insights, where you think about, okay, how do I change or pivot my decision there? Data and analytics is now the thread that actually carries the digital transformation through. It also allows you to overcome the problems, shows you the roadblocks, and perhaps gives you insights that you didn't know, so more for learning. I think some common principles that we think about when we think of data, of course, it should be siloed or segmented. How do you connect all the data? Is your data of good quality? High quality data is very important to meet your business objectives. Do you have legacy systems, or do you have applications in the enterprise that can actually give you insights and can make you work smarter, think smarter, pivot or transform faster? And of course, it all has to be driven by customer expectations or what you're trying to achieve. So put your customer or your client at the center of this, and then work and leverage data around problems to solve problems. I think one can't go wrong with that. Of course, it's easier said than done, but I think those are the main points that I would highlight when it comes to data and analytics.
I think those are quite solid pillars to abide by, because I know from the conversations that we often have with senior leaders, and perhaps you've seen it in your experience as well, it's very easy to get carried away with the latest, let's say, sexy technology, data and analytics. Like you said, it does speed things up, but I suppose those pillars that you mentioned, it's high quality, making sure it's high quality, the legacy systems are right, driven by customer expectations, are really good grounding forces that I think quite helpful for our listeners as well. So yeah, thanks for that, Neha. I mean, it's all great that is a good overview, perhaps to use as a platform to spring into a bit more of the internal functions within transformation. So I think it's often said that the HR function has become even more important amidst this business transformation. Do you think this is true? I mean, a bias, perhaps, given your role, but how has it changed in line with shifting business models, do you think?
You know, I've had the opportunity to do some business roles as well as do some HR roles. And it's very interesting how people are at the center of any business decisions that are getting made. So you're right. Initially, I used to be like, is it a good to do versus a must do? You always have that confusion when you are quote unquote viewed as a support function. I've realized, especially after the pandemic, HR has been in the driving seat. Much like I think I read this somewhere, right? Like the CFO was in the driving seat after the 2008 financial crisis. The CHROs were at the driver's seat after the pandemic, but not without. I think it's extremely important to understand the evolution of our function also, right? So if you think about it, can be viewed as where some people say HR 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. which is just the industrial model, then how we became, you know, moved to process, where process was king, and then now focused on experience and employee wellness, well-being, and ensuring that people are at the center. And they've been always key to the success of the company. But today, I think the talent, the attitude, the actions of people are so crucial. Those are the crucial ingredients that can differentiate between a company's impressive success or a company's dismal failure. And even the leaders on top, right? I think that's important. And HR has a big role to play in shaping and defining the leadership that's required for any enterprise. And in today's service-focused economy, I told you, customers at the center, I think the success really depends on the leadership team's ability to put the right people in the right place, empower the frontline employees, foster effective teamwork, and also have like this outside-in perspective and inside-out perspective. I think having both are extremely important. HR, again, I think the one important ingredient here is to be nimble, to be innovative, to not take the HR function for granted, because much like all other roles are changing, the role of an CHRO or a CPO is also changing and evolving very, very quickly. In fact, many CHROs in organizations are those who don't have traditional HR backgrounds. And many traditional CHROs and people who've done HR throughout are going on to take on business roles. So I think the lines are blurring a lot, and that's beautiful to just see.
That's beautifully put, Neha. Thank you. I mean, I think, talent, it's a given. It's been top of the agenda for 2022. It's going to continue into 2023. And the HR function is just absolutely essential to be driving this forward and to be driving the right kind of transformation forward, the right kinds of people, the right kinds of skills, both top and bottom. So yeah, thanks for that overview. And also, what about the relationship with the CEO when it comes to the HR? Just focusing a bit more on that stakeholder piece, because that's got to be crucial, right?
Alignment. And that's actually very true, right? So HR executives, business partners, CPOs, they must be able to see business issues from the perspective of the CEOs and their peers, come up with thoughtful, creative solutions, communicate them in the terms that their colleagues understand. Because very often in HR, we can get very technical too, you know, which is very interesting. So I think it's important to do that. I think it's also important to have the CEO and the C-suite as the partner on any HR transformation or people transformation or activity that you're doing. I think I also feel it's both ways, right? So what should HR do and what should the CEOs do? I think personally, I feel the best CEOs are those who bring in people, finance, operations, business together to make any decisions and then drive equal or assign equal responsibility and accountability. It's a tough job to do, but I think it completely changes the equation when everyone together with a seat at the table is able to decide with different factors in mind. I think that partnership on what is the issue or what is the problem that we are trying to solve is so important versus having a functional point of view. Because end of the day, all of us are just trying to solve problems. So I think it's very important to focus on that versus what each function is trying to achieve. I guess that is the common denominator for all of us.
You've touched on it a little bit, but quite explicitly, what support do you need from the CEO as a HRD to drive the right kind of transformation?
I think it's very important for the CEO and the CHRO or the people function to be aligned and have the same set of values that you're working from. I think that's the most important foundation. So as long as you're aligned on that, and then deciding on what is it that you're trying to solve together, agree on people being at the center and being humble, right, on things that both sides don't know. I think that's really important because things are changing so quickly that all of us need to understand that you need to pivot sometimes, you need to change plans, and being open to even change your strategy or pivot your strategy to suit business needs and vice versa. So the CEOs also need to keep that in mind. When you're driving transformation. Again, I think what I started with, which is understanding what transformation are you trying to drive? If you're trying to drive, a slow cultural transformation, that will have a completely different approach two, if you're trying to drive a business change and a business transformation. So I think CEOs need to understand that and partner with people leaders on that, because just pace of transformation and keeping it fast for all kinds of transformation is, I would think, the recipe to failure. Sometimes you have to be deliberately slow. Sometimes you have to be, very fast. So I think aligning on that rhythm with the people leader is extremely important for CEOs. And that's the biggest, I would say, support, right? Understanding what you're trying to achieve, agreeing on the pace, agreeing on the metrics, and then ensuring that you put people first would be the key asks, I would say.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Neha. There's a lot in there about sort of being honest about what you don't know as well, and a sort of transparency. And I think that those traits of sort of empathy and open communication and listening, quite crucially, are the top sort of traits for the future leaders, actually. So yeah, great that you touched on that. I'm keen to sort of delve a little bit deeper as well, given all we've been discussing on where do you think talent fits into all of this? Perhaps what are the skills for the future that you need for transformation?
Yeah, the interesting thing is, Hannah, I don't think any of us, so I remember in my previous experience, I think 6 or 7 years ago, I would have a presentation on skills and how it's the biggest crisis that we're going to face. Of course, I didn't know about the pandemic then, but then from an HR end, I thought that's the biggest crisis, right? At least all the studies showed that skills is the biggest crisis that we'll face. And of course, enterprises view skills as the currency to transform and to change. And end of the day, I think all innovation is driven by skills. So I would say, having that in a people strategy is something that's become bread and butter for most of us. It's extremely important to have skills at the center. But I think what you were alluding to in your question was, what skills does HR need, right? How do we need to prepare ourselves? I think all of us need to learn. Continuous learning is extremely important for all functions and all employees, but more so for HR, because we are the ones who are responsible for the skill charter. So if we don't upskill ourselves, and if we don't learn and evolve, we are actually not putting just ourselves, but many more people at risk. So I would say that's number one. The other important skill that we need to pick up, and I'm focusing on that, is change management. It's extremely important to understand how to leverage data, all the points that we discussed earlier. So without a plan or without understanding how to manage change, without being educated on that, it's extremely difficult to get buy-in. It's extremely difficult to even get a seat at the table, to be honest. And then without understanding and leveraging data and analytics, it's equally difficult to make any change initiative a part of an overall strategy. Creating a culture that promotes, embraces both, creating a culture where you're able to learn quickly, those are key ingredients for any transformation. So I would say those skills would be very, very important.
Brilliantly put. Thank you so much, Neha. And I also want to move on, because you're in quite an interesting position, I think, given you're in a global role, but you've also had regional experience as well. So how do you manage the dynamic between global, regional, and local when it comes to executing on transformation? So where do you think the pressure points are? Where can it go wrong?
Yeah, I was reflecting on, this global versus regional. How do you do the roles differently? And honestly, one of those aha moments was the time when I've been successful in my roles, or at least had success in transforming and, driving large scale projects, has been when in a regional role, I thought like a global leader, and in a global role, I thought like a regional leader. I think what I mean to say there is, when I was doing a global talent role, for instance, this was across like 100 plus countries, and all the executives were spread across, and, you had responsibility for, let's say, 500 plus executives, and then talent succession planning and career planning, et cetera. It was so important to get on the ground, understand, talk to them, talk to the HR partners on the ground and business leaders on the ground, and then elevate yourself up and then think about how can you leverage something which is global but benefits everyone on the ground, or tailor it. And then in a regional role, being able to understand how you can leverage the global practices, understanding the strategy, understanding what the enterprise is trying to achieve, and then kind of cascading it down and then getting down. So the ability to move up and dive deep are extremely important. So I would say that about regional and global roles. It's exactly the same. If you're trying to solve the same problem, you have the same objectives, but then how do you move your lens from regional to global, global to regional, to get the best of both worlds?
Yeah, I love that analogy and that phrase of having, you know, that global and also regional mindset and vice versa. I think it breaks it down really nicely. And to pick up on the phrase that you used earlier of an organization as an organism, I suppose that's what makes a healthy organism, is having everyone running in parallel forward together. So yeah, great point. I mean, also keen to move on into to put it quite bluntly, into some of the horror stories, perhaps what you've experienced. In your experience, where does transformation go wrong? What are some of the mistakes to avoid? I think these are really great learning curves for our listeners to hear directly from the horror stories.
So I wouldn't call it a horror story, but I would quote my own experience and example, right? So I remember we were, in my previous experience, we were trying to create a new company, and you know, and in my role was the ASEAN HR director, and then there were six countries that I was responsible for, and we were creating six new companies in those six new countries. And you know, I was very driven. I knew this was extremely important, so that I attended all the meetings, understood what we are trying to achieve, and then there were these country leaders, and all of us would get together. And my initial approach to those meetings and that transformation was to explain the narrative, why we are trying to do what we are trying to do, what are the key things that we want to achieve. But very quickly, it became, these are the things we need to do. And then we started driving that without really at that point learning how to step back and then hand the baton over, because that's when transformation happens, right? You push, you pull, you know when you need to hand over, when you need to get back into the race. So I think when I realized that it's not really, I think my team was kind enough to tell me, Neha, this is not helping, right? This doesn't work in this country, or you don't understand these rules. And then that's when I realized, oh my God, I'm doing it wrong, right? And I would give full credit to them, because they had the openness and they could come and tell me, Neha, let me help you. And I think that's what I meant by humility in leadership, right? Mm-hmm. Very often we are working with leaders and understanding that you need to hear the voice. You may be in a position of more influence or authority, but sometimes they have better sense of what needs to be done in the country. So then handing that baton to them, letting them implement on the ground, and enabling and really being there as the red thread or servant leadership at that point, I realized it's really important when you're driving a transformation. So I think back to your question on what can go wrong. What can go wrong is one person trying to drive the transformation overall. So it can be the CEO, it can be the C-suite, or it can be a regional leader. I think it's really important to take everyone else on the journey and make sure that everyone else is empowered. Because if they're not, you may feel like you're driving transformation, but then it becomes like very top-down versus pervasive and, you know, inclusive.
I mean, yeah, I just can't help but think what a relief it must have been that you built such an environment of trust that the leaders, the head of countries, could come to you and actually be honest and open about that, because that takes a real, an element of humbleness from yourself and an openness and a willingness to listen. That's not always easy, is it?
It's not. And, you know, I've learned through various examples. I've been lucky enough to work with team members, but they've been much more experienced than I have been. So I think that knowing that there are people who definitely know more than you always, I think it's always going to be the case, right? And I don't think, you know, any of us can claim to be, like I told you, authority doesn't mean you're the wisest or the smartest. Authority means you're lucky enough to have that. And how do you enable the rest? I think I've learned it through good examples and good role models in my life. And I've also seen examples of what not to do. So I think, you know, learning and knowing where you're going wrong and pivoting and correcting yourself is so important for all of us, because all of us do go wrong, right? We may have the right intentions, but the approaches can, we may take the wrong approach at many times. So yeah, Hannah, thanks.
But I mean, it is about being able to take the wrong approach sometimes, isn't it? Nomad, no lotus, that's where the great learning curves come from. And I just think you picked up on such a great point, which is brought up a lot within our community. I mean, you have to engage, don't you? You have to be open. I guess you can't sit in an ivory tower and assume you know everything, like you alluded to. You knew that your leaders were capable. They didn't get to where they were by sitting down on the sofa, for example. So you've got to engage in the outside world and the inside world. And that's where you get real results and drive good transformation.
Yeah, yeah. One of the other examples I can think of, Hannah, is during COVID, right? When it hit all of us, I think most enterprises created these squads, which included legal and government affairs and HR and business leaders and finance. And although HR was driving that, I think the wisest thing we did was got everyone together, because none of us knew everything. I mean, no one knew, right? So I think just making the right decision and getting in the right points of view is so important. And then then understanding as events unfolded, we were all learning and trying to change our decisions. And we realized, oh my God, that was so wrong. Let's change, let's do this. So I guess that's another example I can think of where the crowdsourcing ideas and the wisdom of the crowd is so important versus, you know, top down or one person making the decision, because sometimes you don't even understand the problem at hand.
Mm. Yeah, information comes from all levels, doesn't it? And you've got to put power where the information resides, and that feedback loop is crucial. Thanks, Neha. I mean, given sort of the highs and lows that you touched on, I think a good place to end for our listeners would be, what practical advice would you give to them when it comes to leading on a successful transformation? So how can they really ensure they're going beyond the buzzwords?
I think it's really important to read, to learn, to discuss with different subject matter experts, to discuss with different functions, with different people from different countries and regions, understanding the landscape, understanding diverse point of views, and then acting is really important. This does not mean that we go slow. It only means that sometimes you need all of that information to be able to make a decision. So make that extra effort. I think the other important thing is, whenever there's a problem inside, it's extremely important again to think about outside, which means that you link, you get that outside in perspective and not just be focused on solving the problem at hand. So I think stepping back and getting the big picture view is very, very important. And I also feel in today's world, it's very important to be humble, because with all the good intentions and with the changes that I have, with all the good intentions one may have, you can still go wrong. So being able to pivot and change and accept, you know, what you don't know is very important, because there's just so much happening together. It's really important for all of us to leverage each other and get that information and then make decisions. So I would just say, continuously upskill at all levels. It doesn't matter whether it's a senior executive or it's an early career professional, continuously upskill yourself, create that network, get subject matter expertise, create those links inside and outside your enterprise, and then do it with humility. But most of all, I think one thing that all of us need to do in our careers is do things that make you happy. So I guess all of us need to find that. Sometimes we do. Sometimes in some roles, you're still figuring it out. But whatever it is, I think chasing happiness and chasing, you know, doing the right thing, those are my two recipes or my two quick points on how to be successful.
Follow your bliss. Thanks, Neha. I'm going to have to draw the conversation to a close, unfortunately, because we're running out of time. But thank you so much for sharing your insights to our audiences today. I think it's a great way to kick off 2023. Times are indeed tough, but I think it's also in tough times that individuals discover their true leadership, rising above normal and going beyond the obvious, as you've shown. So there is a really exciting opportunity, I think, to capitalize upon these opportunities and getting the right sort of support will be the difference between sink or swim. To our listeners, this episode is part of a wider series called the Asia Leadership Retreat podcast. So please do have a look at our other episodes. Subscribe to be notified for the next release as well. Neha, thank you so much again. It's been a pleasure, and no doubt see you again soon.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.